Hello, Chip.
Hello, Kelly. Do you miss me?
I do. I'm still in the Bahamas. You were here with me last week, and here I am. I mean, rough life. I'm still in the Bahamas. Poor me.
But I will tell you, like, I would love to be in the Bahamas every day of my life. And it's like every day I was there, I question, like, what am I doing with my life? You know, would I be happy selling coconuts, like living in a shack? I might, maybe. You know. But it's also when that isn't your life, it can be stressful because you know that there's so much shit that you need to be doing back in your real life. So it was when I was on the plane on the way home, like I thought I was going to have a panic attack because I knew how much I was coming back to.
That feels
but then being able to actually address it and do some of the things was such a relief.
Yeah.
Because you don't want it. Like I worked a little bit while we were there, but you don't want to be the person that's like working the whole time you're on vacation.
Right.
So, cause it's a buzzkill. So.
Right. Well, it's been a little different since you guys left. We had a group of friends down here last week. And then, one of our friends, Mary, who we talk about a lot on this podcast, she is still here and was staying and was like, you should stay. And I looked at my calendar and I was like, huh, everything could be done over Zoom, which is the blessing of COVID, I suppose. But so she and I have been working here. It's been a little different than like the friend vibe that was happening. You know, like we were all doing all these activities and it was more of like a fun go explore the island vibe. Well, then yesterday she and I, first of all, it's been raining since you guys left. Then we went to lunch and both got food poisoning.
Oh, gosh.
So her case, unfortunately, is worse than mine. So I feel really sorry for her. She was in bed literally all night last night. And I sort of was, too. I haven't been quite as sick, and I've bounced back a little quicker. But the struggle bus in the Bahamas is real. I mean, luckily, the rain has stopped. Hopefully, the stomach issues stop soon as well. And the sun comes out and we get back to Bahamian life, but
doing island things, man.
but anyway, we are here for the New Beginnings Month, which we've talked about last week on the podcast. Every month now on the Velvet's Edge podcast is going to have kind of a theme, and like a lot of them have to do with the time of the year, which I think a lot of people in January are setting intentions, they've set their resolutions, whatever it is, you're starting fresh. It's a new beginning. And no matter where you are in your life, I think this time of year always feels that way. So you and I wanted to address topics under that umbrella of a theme. And sex and dating is one of the things we talk about a lot on the edge because everyone does it.
It
is a universal topic. There is not one person in the universe that does not bump up against sex and dating questions, issues, things that work out, anything like that. So
you're either doing it or wishing you were doing it.
That's right. And if you're not doing it, there's a reason you're not. And so I think that everyone has some stuff they would either like to talk about or questions they want to ask. Like we always say, we are not experts, but we are here to be your friends and your and your cohorts and going through all of these struggles. And it's what we like to do with our friends is sit around and talk about the things that come up. And so we're here to do that with you guys. So this week, we were talking sex and dating, like I just said, and under the guise of new beginnings, sex and dating is really interesting to think about. So I went on my Instagram yesterday and I asked two questions. One was, what fears do new beginnings in sex and dating bring up for you? And the other one is, what do you guys want to know about from us about new beginnings in sex and dating? Like, are there any questions that you have that maybe we can start discussing and as a community, we can bring some insight to. So we're going to start with the first question. I got so much more feedback than I was expecting. I'm like laying in bed feeling like shit, like, damn, everybody has a lot to say about this.
Well, I mean, what I loved about some of the responses was, they made me feel like not alone in sort of my journey. There's certainly universal themes that,
which is exactly what you and I discuss as the reason we want to have these conversations, right? That's why I do Velvet's Edge in the first place is I want to normalize things that I'm feeling so I don't feel so alone. And the things that get brought to me, whether it's via Instagram or, you know, an email, I just am like, why are we all not talking about this shit? Why do we feel so isolated about stuff that actually a lot more people than you think are feeling? And it just, that sense of community and connection is huge, I know, for me, and I think for a lot of people, in not feeling alone in this life.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we are all human, and our spectrum of emotions, like, are all the same. You know, like, right, some of us might lean one way more than the other, but like, we're all experiencing the same feeling. So I think it's really healthy to sort of talk about it, admit them, right, and try to find a way around them or through them or whatever it is that we need to do, or to embrace them, because, you know, sadness and fear and all of these things, like, you can't live your life not feeling them, because there's an equal and opposite reaction to all of those things too. So it's, you know, you can't understand why you're happy if you can't understand why you're sad.
I think you can. I think so. And I think that the greatest happiness I've felt, or the greatest joys I've had, have typically been after going through a season of sadness and pain, because maybe you're just more attuned to what the bad feels like. And so then even the small victories just feel that much greater.
Yeah. There's a different appreciation.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into it. And I can't wait to get the feedback again from you guys on this, because I think a lot of y'all are going to relate to what was brought to us this week on Instagram, via Instagram. Oh my God. We have to tell the people about Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, yes. Speaking of Instagram,
sorry about this side note, but we were literally riding around in a little dinghy boat.
I mean, it was a pretty nice boat, but it was a dinghy.
Oh, we were on the nice boat this day. I forgot. Yeah,
we were on a nice boat that day. Yeah.
That's right. We were. We were very lucky to be on this boat that a friend of ours has down here. And we're cruising. We're just like enjoying the views. And we see this gigantic, I thought it was a cruise ship.
I mean, it's literally the size of the county I grew up in.
Yeah, it was huge, with a helicopter on the back, with more boats on it than I've ever seen in one place.
It probably had 10 of its own boats that it was carrying.
It was insane. So our friends started Googling the name of the boat. We were like, you know, 100% they thought we were paparazzi. We like circled the boat multiple times.
It was called Ulysses. And you can look up boats, information about big boats like that by... you put Motor Yacht Ulysses.
So we turned into private detectives and figured out, well, we found out first that it was some billionaire that bought it years ago, right?
Or something. Yeah, a billionaire from New Zealand. It was a billionaire businessman from New Zealand who had it built. And I think it was $250 million.
I mean, could you imagine?
It holds 66 guests.
And then the staff.
Yeah, and then the staff is probably 40 people. Yeah.
It looks like there was a pool outside. I mean, it was wild. It really did look like
it was seven or eight stories tall. It was crazy. So
we figure out it's this billionaire from New Zealand, and we're like, oh, that makes sense, blah, blah, blah. We kind of research him. Well, then someone says, oh my God. And Mark Zuckerberg bought it from him. However,
it's like September. Yeah, he bought it in like September of last year. Recently. Yeah.
And so anyway, we saw a helicopter take off, and then we saw, some people getting on jet skis, and we were like, oh my God, it's Zuck. There he is.
And so I slid into Zuck's I slid into his DMs. I wrote, yo, Zuck, what would it take for us to hang out on Ulysses while we're at Harbor Island? She's a beaut. And of course, it's still unread.
Yeah, I love that you thought that he would ever respond to anyone calling him Zuck. Yo, Zuck.
That's like his Instagram handle. At Zuck.
But you're not like a friend.
I know, but whatever.
She's a beaut. I mean, if he had responded, I would lose respect for him.
He could have at least read it. Like, he could have at least read it.
You think he's running that shit? I mean,
his Instagram is fucking terrible.
Maybe.
So yes, I think he's running it.
How do you own Instagram and have a terrible Instagram?
Yeah, it seems pretty personal. Like, I bet he's doing it.
Well, maybe he is, but I'm sure he gets a million DMs a day and you just can't keep up.
Yeah. I mean, it's 9.2 million followers. So
yeah.
I'm sure he can't keep up. He needs to get an intern on that shit to at least like look for things. Like, I don't know. Like, he should be mining for information.
Yeah.
Whatever.
You guys should Google this boat though. I have a picture of it, so maybe I'll post it, but like, holy shit, it was insane.
The craziest thing about it was, okay, so you can see these amazing boats on the side that are like, it's lifeboats, and it's boats that they use to like go into town, like these beautiful wooden boats that like, and I'm not a boater. So, I mean, I am a boater, but I don't know
you
about.
You grew up on the water.
Though. I did grow up on the water, but I don't know a lot about, you know, how much boats cost. But the people that we were with thought that, and there were two of them, these like gorgeous wooden boats, guessed that like they each probably cost $1 million to make, which is just insane. These are spare boats. But then we found this photo, an aerial photo of the boat, of the yacht. And on the top front level on the bow, there are five other boats. One of them, and they all have these like massive cranes to move them. But one of them was like basically the size of the boat that our friend lives on, which is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, a yacht.
Right.
Like, and it was like tucked into the bow of this boat. Like, we're like, this is insanity.
It was just one of the many boats too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just, that
the yacht was carrying a yacht.
Yeah. That level of money is so beyond my realm of even thinking or understanding. Like, I can't process it.
Cannot process.
Yeah. Are we doing abbreviations today?
Yes. No processing.
Beaut. She's a beaut, Zach.
She's a beaut. Can't pros.
Yeah. So you guys go check out the Ulysses. Google that beaut. It's a good
one. That beaut. All right. We digress.
Anyway, let's get back to sex and dating. So the question became, what fears do new beginnings in dating or sex bring up for you? And I wanted us to give our answers first because, again, I think this is such a universal thing that no matter who you are, even if you're a fucking supermodel or you're Mark Zuckerberg, I think that you have fears around this stuff. And it is part of the human condition. And I think it's like all of our internal messaging and critical voices and things like that. So do you want to go first with what are your fears?
I think my biggest thing is fear. And this is going to sound, well, you know what? I'm not going to say that it sounds basic because to me, it felt basic, but when I read responses, it feels really universal. It's a fear of rejection, you know, like nobody wants to like not feel loved, you know, or not feel sexy or not feel wanted. So I think that's the overarching thing for me. The something that's like, I think a little bit more just like personal is like, I kind of let myself go. I hate my body right now. I don't want anyone to see it. So the idea of like, having to be naked and intimate with somebody is just like embarrassing, you know, like, and I think the reason why I use the word embarrassing is because I don't have like, there's no reason for me to be overweight other than my own callousness. Like I have just chosen to be unhealthy. And for that, I'm embarrassed. I don't have a thyroid issue that's making me gain weight. Like I gain weight because I love ice cream, you know, and sweets and don't work out enough. So, I mean, I think that is really the thing. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because like now I'm eating my feelings. So yeah. I have to, I think what also makes it embarrassing is that I fully understand the steps that I need to take to make these feelings go away. And I know that it's possible. I'm just not doing it. And that is where I find the embarrassment. So, you know, I think the overarching thing is it's like, I need to love myself more, you know, like I need to love myself enough to take care of myself so that I get to a place that I'm proud of my body. And then I'll have more confidence to not worry about being rejected. I know I'm awesome. Like, that's the thing is like, I know that, you know, I know I'm magnetic. I know all of these things that like make me attractive to other people.
Yeah.
But I worry about the physicality of it. And so I think, well, no one's attracted to me. Look at my fat ass, you know? So it's like, I have to get to a point where like, I can cross that off the list because all of the other stuff is in place. Right. So
I think it's so interesting. I'm listening to you talk right now. And I think I've had a therapist say this to me about the things that we project onto people. Like, no one's ever going to be attracted to me. Like, you don't know that. You know what I mean? That's like, but that's the voice in your head. So then you're probably bringing that energy out into the world and you're guarded or you're not feeling like your best self. And so that's what you present to people. And even if they were attracted to you, maybe you wouldn't be able to accept it.
Yeah. Or even like I don't know if I've said it on here before, but I've definitely said it before. I literally like someone could walk up to me and so blatantly hit on me.
Yeah.
And I either think that it's a joke or I it goes over my head. I miss it. You know, like it's like this weird thing because I have told myself that people aren't going to be attracted to me.
Right.
And so, yeah. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy too. It's like, well, this is a comfort blanket. As much as I don't like it, I can at least live in the comfort of saying, well, you know, like this is why I'm single and I know why, and I can be comfortable in that.
Familiar.
Yeah. But if I lose the weight and get to a place where I feel great and I still am not meeting somebody, then I have, there's more layers that I need to unfold. And that I think is where the real fear lies.
That is an interesting thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is interesting, and I do the same thing in different ways, but you go to what's familiar because it's what you know, even if it's causing you an immense amount of pain. Or, you know, for me, it's relationship cycles that are not good for me.
Right.
And I get super hooked in. You've seen. I get so hooked into them, and I can't really get out. But it's like this thing in my gut. Like, I'm so pulled into these chaotic cycles. Maybe because of childhood stuff or, you know, some of it I'm still uncovering. But going out into like a place where I might be like trying to work through my healing and then meeting someone at the same place instead of going back to the old kind of dynamic that I'm used to feels so fucking scary, even though it's what I want.
Right.
Do you feel that?
Yeah, because it's like there is something about the comfort of familiarity. You know, like you, and it might, it's even subconscious.
Yes.
You know, it's like, you're like, oh, I feel like I've known you forever. Like, and so it's like the challenge there is almost like you have to put yourself into a situation where you're going to date someone or be willing to like, take the time to get to know someone that almost feels like the exact opposite of what you've always thought you wanted.
Right.
You know, which is really scary because we all think that we have a type or we know what we're looking for. But
right.
For those of us who are single, like clearly we haven't been doing it right.
Right.
You know, so it's I think that is a really scary place to be. But, you know, I because of our relationship and how much time we've spent together, particularly in the last like couple of months, like I'm really proud of the journey that you've put yourself on. You know, it's like you're a student of relationships right now. And I think it's something to behold, you know, like I think it's really important. You're learning so much about yourself through the process that you're going to come out of this on the other side, a changed person that's going to attract the right type of person, you know?
Well, so, crying.
Yeah.
So. Thank you.
Look at you being vulnerable.
I mean, right. Like the people in this podcast have heard me cry a time or two.
Yeah, it's fine. We've all heard it.
Everybody in the world at this point. Thank you for saying that. I do feel like a student and I have so much, sometimes it's overwhelming because it's like, once you start to pull back one layer, then it's like, oh fuck, there's a million layers under there. And, it can be overwhelming, but that's why you just take it one day at a time. And I agree with you with the comfortability, the familiarity. And I think part of where a lot of my panic, you know, and anxiety has been coming in, or even, getting out of my last relationship, a lot of that is like, it's like this walking into this unknown place that I don't feel like I've ever been in my life. And even though it's like where I've wanted to go, like I've said, like I've known for a long time, like that is the kind of relationship I want, you know? But I have not been able to quite take the leap into actually getting to that. Like I still go to familiar cycles that I know. And it, like you said, it's subconscious. Like it's a very, we're not like aware of what we're doing a lot of times or why we're drawing and what we draw in. And you said something about like, we're not doing it right. And I don't, I have to switch that narrative in my head because I will beat myself up over and over because I'm like, oh my God, you're fucking almost 40. You can't get this right. And actually getting out of my last relationship, that was one of the hardest parts for me about being a single woman going into my 40s, was that people were going to think about me that I am fucked up. You know, like, I'm just too fucked up. I can't figure it out. And I don't really believe that anymore. I think that everyone's journey looks different. And I think there's plenty of people in relationships that are
living doing it right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they're living, you know, maybe not their true, in their truest self, or they're just going through the motions and living in dysfunction or whatever it is. I mean, that's not mine to figure out. But, the fact that I'm sitting here asking the questions is really hard. And so I'm trying to give myself the credit to be like, you're actually being brave to face this shit and to try to do something different, which as a human is against our typical nature. Like, I think we just want comfort and so insecurity. So anyway, with all that said, my answer to the question actually falls in line with all of this stuff, because the narrative in my head is, or the critical voice in my head and some of my fears that come up, are that I'm always going to be alone. Like, I want someone to meet me, or to have this desire to grow and to heal and, you know, to want to have a kind of relationship dynamic where it's transparent and you're working together to be healthy and work through old traumas and not live in the old familiar pattern places, but to be putting yourself out there in a vulnerable state. And I'm like, oh my God, guys like that just don't exist. Like, that's the story in my head. And I know that's not fair, but it's really scary because I just am like, if I leave what's familiar, or if I try to walk out on this limb that I'm so fucking scared to walk out on, I am going to be alone forever. Because look, I'm 40 and I haven't figured it out yet. So what makes me think that all of a sudden it's just going to magically switch? So yeah, those are the things. I mean, I'm working through them every day, and you just got to keep moving forward. But I'm just scared that guy doesn't exist ultimately.
Well, I think he does. And you touched on something too. And I think you're right. Like, I wasn't right to say we're doing it wrong. We feel like we're doing it wrong.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that's a really good point. But you know, we're all sort of victims of society too. Like, you know, from birth, we're taught that, like, there's Prince Charming and there's the princess, and he rides in on a horse and he saves her, and everything is copacetic, and like, you have to have babies by this time and be married by this time. And there's so many outside forces that are beyond our control that sort of shape that narrative for us that are completely unfair and unrealistic, right, in most cases. But I do think, you know, the point is, I feel like you are investing in yourself right now in a self-love kind of way that is going to reap benefits that you are beyond your wildest dream. Because I think once you get to a place where you feel centered and love yourself and accept all of your wrinkles and all of the little things, any blemish, and I don't mean just physical, I just blemishes on your life, and accept them for you and be like, okay, I recognize that. I'm going to work towards making that better. The right man is going to walk into your life, and he's going to see you the way that you now see yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's right. I mean, that's what everyone keeps telling me. And it's just interesting, as you were talking, I was thinking, it's funny how, because you mentioned something about, like, blemishes and accepting yourself. And, like, for me, a lot of that too is accepting my needs for what they actually are, because I don't feel sometimes, you know, I'm a 4 on the Enneagram, so I think this is a very common thing with 4s, but I feel like separate from a lot. Like, I'm like, I'm just so fucking sensitive, or I feel things so big, you know? And so then I'll just try to pretend like I'm like everyone else that I see around me, and I'm not so sensitive, or I'm not feeling things in the capacity that I am. And I've talked about this when we were talking about sober curiosity a little bit. I think I was drinking to kind of medicate some of that shit down. Like, oh my God, I'm so anxious. Or like, I know this is happening. I see this dynamic and I have a lot of knowledge about this stuff, but I can't communicate it with people and feel seen or understood. And so I'm just going to drink my way through this so that I don't feel this. And it doesn't work, but we convince ourselves that it does. And so for me, a part of accepting my quote unquote blemishes or whatever is also accepting my needs and wants are what they are and standing kind of firm in that. Like, I think as women, we kind of, or we tend to do this thing where we're like, you know, okay, fine. That these are his needs. I'm going to meet his needs so that then maybe mine get met because I have the safety of this relationship because he's happy. So he's not going to abandon me. And ultimately we're abandoning ourselves and get completely lost in the cycle. So that's something that I'm just like, I can't do that anymore. And if that means that I'm alone for a while, it's really scary, but like the only kind of relationship I really need in my life or want is to be seen, as you said, for who I actually am and for my needs to be accepted for what they actually are by myself, like by me and also by my partner. And that's not like, I know there's things that not one person can meet every need or whatever, but like I do need to be in a relationship where I'm not trying to stuff down things about myself that are huge parts of me or pretend like I'm something I'm not or, you know, something different than I am to try to keep the relationship. So does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think at the core of it all is like, even within a relationship, I think the most important thing is self-love.
Yeah.
You know, like you should want your partner to, you know, in marriage, they say for better, for worse. So it's like in those for worse moments, it's you should expect and want your partner to recognize, oh, you're hurting for these mm-hmm. things, and to give you the space to heal, you know, and participate in that healing.
Yeah.
And I think that like at the end of the day, it's, you have to put, even within a relationship, you have to put yourself first mm-hmm. because you're not going to be able to arrive as your best self for them in their times of need if you feel like you've already given everything and you've neglected yourself.
I think that goes for everyone. I also think that the programming in our culture tends to make that a little harder for women. Like
yeah.
the mother role, the, you know,
yeah.
wife role.
Yeah.
It's a lot about, like, men are kind of wired to be like, no, this is what I want and I'm going to go get it. And this is what I need. And although I'm not saying men don't sacrifice too or compromise or any of that stuff, I just think it's a little more in men's nature to stand firm in their needs and wants and all of that and to go get them. Whereas as women, we start off from this place of like, oh, okay, let me like walk on eggshells and like, let me, you know, mold myself into this perfect version of myself so that you accept me. And let me give all of this stuff so that you don't leave me, like I said. And you just completely get lost. And so to stand firm in your boundaries, actually, even a lot of men don't respond well to that.
Right, yeah.
Because like, it's foreign to them too.
Well, because men are also, you know, taught to be emotionless, you know, from society. Yeah. Like, because I think it all goes back to, you know, it's obviously dates back to the beginning of civilization, but like historically men were breadwinners and it was about like, survival and like you had to win to protect the family, to provide the things that the family needed to survive and to be safe. You know, it's human instinct just to want to protect yourself and the ones that you love. So emotions were sort of like removed from the picture. We live in a very different world today where like women are breadwinners, you know, in a lot of households, the woman is bringing home more bread than the man. And so we cannot, those old tropes just don't work anymore. And I think that we're in this like really interesting time in civilization where we're sort of rewriting the script mm-hmm. and it's not easy and it's going to take work from both sides. Like
right.
men have to be more in tune with I'm going to say their feminine energy because it's like, we have to feel our emotions. We have to like, I think in order for civilization to continue, to survive, we're going to have to find a more even playing field. It's like, it just doesn't work that way anymore.
I agree. I just, when you were talking, I was having this vision of this caveman and he's like, oh, I killed a lion today. Oh, me need sex. Oh, you know, it's like,
yeah.
I'm like, we got to let that shit go. That is
totally.
Not,
because the idea is like, I need a son to help me protect everything. You know, it's like, it's right. about, it was about procreation, all of those things. Like, look, obviously we need to procreate as a human race to continue to survive. But I think that in the way that we interact on an emotional level needs to change.
Yes. And it's definitely being brought to the surface, I think. And I'm happy about that too.
But yeah.
I feel you. I think a lot of the programming stuff is like, we're just starting to scratch the surface of some things, or in my awareness we are. And so it's like this wobbly, you know, baby deer trying to stand up for the first time. We're like, ugh, I don't know how to do this. And how do I navigate this? And a lot of times it can be tumultuous and insane. And I think we just have to all keep taking the next right step.
I think the most important thing, and I think that you did this, is at a certain point you said, you're not listening. Mm-hmm. You are not meeting my needs. Mm-hmm. I'm moving on. Because I think there are a lot of people that are in relationships that still are, they compromise and they like, and I do like, don't get me wrong. There is always going to be compromise in relationships, but I don't think that you should be the only one compromising in a relationship. If you are the only one compromising in a relationship, you are not in a healthy relationship.
Right. And I, yes.
And you fought really hard for both people to compromise and it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And you had to say, I'm out.
I think the biggest thing for me was looking in the mirror and not recognizing myself. Mm-hmm. And being, and so whatever got me to that place, you know, like that's the piece that I was just like, I can't live my life this way. Because one, it's not fair to me, but two, it's not fair to anyone. Like it's to look in the mirror and not like the version of yourself that you see, or to know that like I wasn't, in the way that I was functioning in my life at that time, I was not going to be able to grow. And what I know right now is, as fucking uncomfortable as I am, and I've taken so many medicators away, so I'm even more uncomfortable. But it's that like I am being challenged to grow, and like I feel it, I know it in my being, I know it everywhere in my body that like this is just a stage of life that I have to go through to get to where I'm supposed to be going. And not that I'm going to be like in this, like I'm going to figure it out, but the next version of, or the next stage of my life, I can't get there unless I face these things within myself to where I'm not abandoning myself. I can hold a fucking boundary. You know, like I was literally walking around boundaryless, and as an empath, that is the worst fucking idea you can ever have. And I still haven't gotten really great at that, but I am trying to practice it a little more. And it is literally one day at a time for me right now, because it's really uncomfortable. But yeah, I think that if you're in a relationship and you're looking in the mirror, not able to see a version of yourself that you like or appreciate or can see where you're going, and you're not completely lost, then that is not a good sign.
No.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, should we see what some of the other listeners were thinking too?
Let's move into listener responses. So I broke it down into like a couple different themes on this first question, because we had a lot of repeat answers, and it made me actually really a little sad. Two things. I noticed what you said, like there's so much commonality. Is that a word?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Commonality, where amongst us with this topic, like most of the things that one person wrote in, someone else had written in too. And so I do think it's important that we just say them out loud so that people know they're not alone. Also, I think it's really important that we start talking about these things, because there is absolutely no other way that we can do anything different if we don't address it, you know? And so if we're just walking around so scared all the time and we're not voicing what our fears are, how are we going to learn to do anything different? We're just going to keep repeating the same cycle. So the first section that I broke it down into was vulnerability. And we had so many people write in that what they're scared about the most is just being vulnerable. Hannah said, everything about being vulnerable, it just sounds scary. Grace said, where do I begin? It's the putting myself out there. I'm 53. She's dating someone younger, so she had a lot of issues with that. But she said it makes her feel really vulnerable. Like, her age makes her feel really vulnerable. There was a lot of just people just writing in general about vulnerable. Devin said, fear of being vulnerable again, fear of if I'm really ready, fear of ignoring red flags again. Nina said, trusting myself. I really struggle with that too, especially when I think you've had a cycle of dysfunctional relationships. You're like, how do I know that my attraction isn't part of that same dysfunctional cycle, or that I'm actually just attracted to this person? You know, like, I've been taught now at this point that when I have chemistry with somebody, it's not necessarily a good sign. It might just be me repeating old addictive patterns. Keisha said being her fear in the vulnerability piece was being used as a coping mechanism. Did you see that one?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts?
Where is it again? Read it to me again.
Keisha under vulnerability said, I feel scared of being used as a coping mechanism.
Right. When I saw that the first time, it made a little sad, because it was more about someone else's actions than hers. And that, you know, we're not necessarily in positions to control what other people do.
Yeah.
So, I'm curious why, there must be a cycle of if that is her biggest fear of being used, what's the cycle that she's in and choosing people that have used her in the past?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm no therapist, but my guess would be there's some emotional unavailability attraction, which I totally identify with, Keisha. it was interesting when I read it, because I think I had talked about this a couple podcasts ago, or maybe it was in December. It was my podcast with Jake Woodard and Melissa, his fiance. And I was going on a rant about how I was fearful of my ex moving on really quickly. And that when I would say that to people were like, yeah, that's kind of just what guys do. And I'm like, this is bullshit. Why are we, that is a bad programming thing right there.
Yes. And
boys will be boys. I hate that fucking statement. No, yeah. They won't. Like, okay, fine. We're going to just keep applauding fucked up behavior and not healing your pains and griefs, and like saying and just continuing to push medicating as the only option, or like, that is why she would feel that way, is because there are a lot of people out there that when they get in uncomfortable situations or feelings, and especially with men, because it's just applauded, or it's just, you know, I'm doing air quotes right now, but it's just presented as that is what men do, or that's the way to get over a breakup, is, what do they say, get under somebody else. And it's like, it's disgusting. It's like, it's actually really started to piss me off and gross me out, because it's like, you're, so now not only are you getting out of a relationship where there's probably a lot of pain, but you're also taking someone else, like an innocent bystander, and you are using them to make yourself feel better without being able to offer them anything.
Right. And not addressing what you haven't gotten over.
Exactly. And so you're coming to them as a shell of a human. You're using them so that you're out of your pain. And then you probably are not going to be able to show up in a relationship capacity for them, I would guess, because you're actually probably not healed or ready. And so you're just going to discard them, and that's going to cause them more pain, you know? And I think a lot of women walk around just like hating men, and men are upset with us about that. But it's like, well, with that kind of fucking behavior and how we're treated, and like, we're love bombed to think that like you have so much to offer, but then it's really just to get you in bed. Like, so that you feel better, it's fucked up and it needs to change.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think it plays back into this whole, like, men aren't emotional. Men don't show emotion kind of thing. It's like, it plays into the, well, I just have to get past this rather than sit in the emotion and figure out what it is that either you did wrong or your partner did wrong or whatever it was in the relationship that brought it to that this place.
Work. Right.
Yeah.
And the thing about men not being or being emotionless, men are not emotionless. And that is a programming thing that we have to stop too. It's like teaching boys that they can't have emotions. Boys are human too. They have emotions.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't look the same, but they have emotions. And so we got to start teaching young men, I believe, how to feel through them and like give them the tools so that they don't think that drinking or just having sex with someone else is going to be the only way that they get over a breakup. Like,
right.
It's
right.
okay to need to go get help, or it's okay to need to take some space to yourself, or it's okay to cry in your bed alone at night. Like, that's part of breaking up. That sucks, but it's what happens and it's uncomfortable and painful. But if you don't feel it, it just keeps repeating and it just keeps, you keep hurting more people, I think. So, including yourself. Let's go into the fears of dating. This was a category that I want to go to rejection first, because you mentioned this. A lot of people wrote in
a lot of people
their fear, their biggest fear in moving forward in sex and dating is just rejection. A lot of people said just straight up rejection. A lot of it was about in sex, I think, feeling rejected and how vulnerable we can actually feel when we put ourselves out there physically, you know, just like, oh God, it's scary. And I mean, I think that our culture tries to just like brush over that. And like, you're just like, oh, I'm so sexual and whatever. But it's like, there's feelings behind all of that too. And yeah, it's fun to just have fun with it. But also like, what's the deeper meaning there? Or what's the deeper internal thing happening with the vulnerability of letting someone see you naked for the first time.
Right.
Like you know, said.
You know, what's funny is like thinking about the rejection thing. And like, I'm curious if it's more common in women than it is in men, like just from our trip, like we saw so many, cause you know, when you're on an island and people are just sort of passing through, like, they let the like shit goes out the window. And we witnessed guys hitting on our friends at the bar. Like fucking, there was a married guy next to me. He had a wedding ring on. His children were on the lock screen of his phone. Yet he was blatantly hitting on her, like saying like he wanted to bang our friend. And I mean, he ended up falling out of a chair and embarrassing the shit out of himself. And like, that to me is like my worst nightmare is something like that happening. But like, he seemingly did not have fear of rejection at all until he embarrassed the shit out of himself. And then he was
hammered.
Gone. He was hammered. But I wonder if the fear of rejection is more common in women than men.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a Google search you could do really fast for us, even though it'll piss Susan off.
But then Susan will get mad and you'll call me out for it.
I think it's kind of a universal thing. I think men maybe try to hide it more.
Yeah. I just feel like guys shoot their shot a little bit more than women do. Yeah.
Right. That's just the way you're also taught, that men do the pursuing. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the answer is to that, but I do know that Marv always says to me, rejection is your best protection. And I'm always like, oh, every time he says that, because it's anytime you face rejection, it feels like such a punishment to me, or it feels like I'm not good enough. You know, that's the instant place that I go. And when he says it like that, it's like, oh, right. Like if I think back on old relationships, like I think back on when I was supposed to get married. And do you know how fucking terrible it felt to find out that my fiance had been cheating the whole entire relationship 3 months before my wedding? I mean, it felt very rejecting. And it also felt like, what is wrong with me? Like I personalized a lot of it for a long time. And now looking at it, I'm like, well, thank God that I found out before I actually got married. And as painful as it was, it did push me into recovery of my own and starting on this journey that I'm still on, obviously. And so it does now, I can look back at it now and feel the protection from the universe of being like, oh no, honey, this is not the guy for you, you know? But that in the time doesn't feel that way because you're wanting so desperately to make things work, or you feel like you're so in love that how could you ever move forward or be with someone else or anything like that? And now I'm like, thank you, universe, for doing for me what I could not do for myself. In that instance.
Well, it's really hard to see that it was like a flaw with him and not a flaw with you.
Right.
You know, in the moment.
When it comes to sex, I think that's always the case.
Totally.
Especially if there's other people involved, it feels very much about you and not being enough. And the truth is usually if people are cheating, it actually is about them, you know, or if there's anything else going on, it's usually about something in them, not something in you.
Right.
Not always, but like, you know what I'm saying. Okay. Now let's move into fears of dating, because there's a lot under this one. This is just in general, and they're kind of all over the place, but this one comes from Mary. She said her biggest fear is that she's recovering from love addiction and she's trying to date again. It's so hard and scary. Do you have any thoughts? Because obviously, well, I can speak to this one a lot.
I mean, I don't know that I've ever suffered from love addiction. So I think I'm going to like volley this one over to you, because this is, you're getting your PhD in it. So.
Lucky me. I hate the word love addiction. It's something I've like struggled with a lot. I've had a therapist, Jody White, on this podcast a lot, who specializes in love addiction. She's also in recovery from love addiction herself. And she and I talk about that. Like, the word addiction in general feels really ick. And when you're talking about it over something like love or sex, something that like, you know, it's not like alcohol. Like, you don't just like stop drinking and this is done. Love is a part of our lives, hopefully. Sex is a part of our lives. Just like food, if you're in like an Overeaters Anonymous program, it just all feels a little different because you need these things for survival. Like, these are part of being a human. And so when it gets put into this context of addiction, it gets scary. And I don't know. It's a hard word. But all that to say, yes, I am in recovery for love addiction. And I have started to kind of talk about that publicly, but it is a little bit strange still. And for me, when I try to explain it to people, it's about an attachment wounding from my childhood. And that can come from many different things. But in me, it has programmed as I pick people who are emotionally unavailable. And then when they can't meet me emotionally where I need to, I get really hooked into this cycle of trying to get them to be able to do that. And so it's a very toxic cycle of like this push-pull dynamic where, and it can become like emotionally abusive as well, but it's this, you know, they're available to me, whether it's love bombing, which it can be a lot of times in this kind of cycle, or they're just trying to get me in the relationship, whatever. And then I get hooked into however they are doing that, but it's not something that can be maintained consistently. And so I'm constantly chasing this little version of whatever I got the taste of at the beginning of the relationship or when things were really good. And like I said earlier, it can look like me abandoning myself to fit into some mold to be able to keep the relationship. I got to the place in the last couple of years where it was just like I couldn't function. I was so in my own addiction of this stuff. And what the recovery process looks like with that is it's literally a chemical withdrawal. And you've seen me now. That is what I've been going through. And it is fucking terrible. It's hard as shit. I've read so many articles about it being harder than coming out of a heroin withdrawal. Like, because chemically our body gets so wired to the dopamine and oxytocin, I believe, the hits you are getting, that you're just letting go of that is really hard because it also feels like you're going to fucking die without it. Like, getting out of this, you know, dynamic can feel like I'm gonna die. Like, it can feel like that to me, because as a child, if you're abandoned, you will die. Like, you wouldn't have food, you wouldn't have shelter, you wouldn't have any of the stuff you need to survive. And so if we don't heal those wounds from wherever they came from, and from whatever reason, for whatever reason that our attachment needs weren't met, we bring it into adult life, and feeling abandoned can feel like the most detrimental thing to your own survival. And so you do whatever you can to hold on to it until it becomes addictive. So all of that to say, for anyone who has not, you know, heard about love addiction, that is what it can look like. There's a lot of different versions of this. I hate using the word disease either, but of this stuff. And so everyone's story looks a little different. But when you get into a recovery program, or you're working with a therapist on this stuff, you know, there's a 12-step part of it too, if you want to do it that way. But it is interesting, because you go back into your initial abandonment wounds or attachment needs and all of these things. And so you're doing all of this old trauma work and uncovering all these things about you. And within that, you're also laying down maybe some of the medicators that you've used, whether it's like constantly having someone in the wings, or whether it's constantly needing to be in a relationship. You know, like, I don't know what it looks like for everyone. It looks different for everyone's stuff, but you're laying that down. For me, it looked like I need to lay alcohol down right now so that I can have a clear head. I need to meditate every day twice. Like, I need to do all these steps. And so it's a process, and it's a lot of healing. And then you get to a certain place where you can create like a dating plan, but you're going into dating, and like we said last week on the alcohol podcast, without your typical barriers, you know, like, what is it going to look like to date without alcohol? I'm so like, oh my fucking God. Or what is it going to look like to not to have boundaries when you first date and take it really slow and be, it's just really fucking vulnerable. So with Mary, with her question, I'm like, oh my God, if you're actually starting the dating process and coming out of love addiction, one, it's something you live with your whole life. So it doesn't just like go away. And so I anticipate that I'll be really nervous about getting reactivated into it, you know, and like picking the same kind of partner and doing the same kind of cycle. And like, I'm so scared of that. And because I know what it brings to my life, and I don't want that. And I think it would be really scary too, because of the unknown that I just mentioned. Like, she's probably never dated in a place of recovery or coming from a place of being in her healthy self. And so there's a lot of stuff like holding boundaries that is just not really easy if you come from a place where you didn't get your needs met in an attachment way. And so like, you might let go of your boundaries to be able to maintain relationships. And so anyway.
Well, I mean, I don't know if this isn't necessarily a case for everybody, because it doesn't, you know, I don't know if Mary's drinking or not, but particularly for you, I mean, it's like, do you foresee needing to lead? Like, maybe it is like, if say if you're doing it online, because that's how people date these days,
yeah,
you're setting up profiles. Like, do you think putting things in like sober or like don't drink, like those sorts of things will help sort of like weed out some of the bullshit?
Sure.
Because if someone who's looking for you on the other end also says sober, they've either made a choice to never drink, or have worked through something to recover, whether it's alcoholism or love addiction or whatever it is, alcohol was a crutch that they worked through and got out of their lives. So it shows that they've put in work, they've invested in themselves. So it gives, like, I think you have to be vulnerable enough to like put those markers in whatever your profile is, or, you know, if your friends are trying to introduce you to somebody, if that's the route that you want to go, you have to be like, look, I don't want to date anybody that drinks. Right. I don't need the distraction right now. I want to know that someone has the personal strength to overcome whatever they needed to overcome. And then maybe you're going to meet somebody who's in a, like, maybe not the same exact journey as you, but on a journey,
right,
which increases the likelihood of it maybe actually working this time.
Right. And I think that is like, you know, I told you before, I really can't even think about dating right now.
Right.
Getting massive, like I want to throw up. Like when you just said dating app, I'm like, oh God, like I can't even think about making a profile without wanting to vomit. So I'm definitely not ready.
Right.
But
Well, your body knows.
yeah, my body knows. And so I haven't even, my friends and I, we don't even talk about who I'm going to date next. Like it's just not even on the table right now. But I will say I have thought to myself what my needs would be. And like I said in the last podcast, I don't really know what this journey with drinking is for me. I just know I can't do it right now because it wasn't helping me heal and it wasn't bringing clarity that I need to my head to be able to get out of toxic cycles that I was doing with myself even. It's just like I have to have clarity right now. And so you know, maybe in the future I have a better relationship where I'm not medicating with alcohol and that can look different, which I've lived a lot of my life that way too. And so it's hard for me to decipher what is seasonal and what is like forever. I do feel great and I do like this version of myself a lot more without alcohol. So who knows? Maybe I'll stick with it forever. But I don't, with that said, I do think you're right in that I need to be in a relationship where the other person also is on their own healing journey. And I don't know what it looks like or why they would be on that journey. And I think that that is where it can be different. It doesn't have to look exactly like mine, but I need to be able to trust that, you know, they have an awareness or the self-awareness among, you know, within themselves to where I'm not having to overcompensate or I'm not the only one that's quote unquote fucked up and doing this work. Like that won't work. And I will not be able to stay in a sober mindset in that dynamic. I won't. And so that's what I was saying earlier about my big fear being like, oh my God, I'm going to be alone forever because who else is doing this shit? But I'm sure there are people. I just don't know them.
There's tons. You're
Yeah.
just not looking for them right now.
Well, I haven't been, right. And
Yeah.
so it's just overwhelming. But the only answer I would have for Mary with all of that, this is the long way to get to this, is you know, it's just like what my sponsor keeps saying to me, it's one day at a time. And like literally, we just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other, breathe, take the next right step. And also, like something I've been telling myself a lot is I have a higher power. I believe everybody does, whatever it is for you, if it's God, if it's Buddha, if it's, you know, whatever. But I believe that, you know, if it's the universe, if it's a star, if it's a fucking tree, I don't know, you have some sort of higher power. And the biggest problem that I get myself into is when I try to control everything, the outcomes, the way my life maps out. And I just believe that it is already mapped out. And this is another thing Marv says to me is like, you just have to keep showing up. The plan is already. My mom's calling. She must have known what I was
Rhonda.
talking about. You know, it's already mapped out, and so we just got to keep showing up. And I think if we're, like you said, doing the work on ourselves and becoming the best version of ourselves and loving ourselves, hopefully the person is just gonna come when it's the right time. And you just I don't think you're gonna have to try so hard. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Mom.
Well, I also think that it's important to like only try when you feel like you're ready. Like,
Yes.
don't date because you feel like you have to.
No, but that's how you become a coping mech or you use people
Yeah,
become
like,
coping mechanisms for you.
yeah.
It's fucked up,
You
man.
have to wait until you feel like you're ready.
But I do think in this stuff, it can be so scary to put yourself back out there. And like you were saying with vulnerability, we all kind of can hide. And so if you can take a step forward, if you've done the work and you are ready, I think that that's right. And it's gonna just, you just have to know, like, it's just gonna be uncomfortable and you're probably gonna fumble through it. And probably the first person you meet is not gonna be the one you marry, you know, like, but try to enjoy dating maybe more than like, I have a mentor who says it's a relationship, not the universe. And like, Lord knows I have made relationships in my universe. Like, literally in my life, they become my entire universe. And it doesn't serve me. I don't think it really serves anyone. But just remembering that, like, it's dating. It doesn't need to be, it should be fun. And, you know, if it's not fun, obviously check into that. But like not revolving your whole life around if you're with a partner, if you have a partner, if you're in the perfect relationship, if you're not in a relationship. Like it's just like there's so much more to life.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's like when I've been on like dating kicks, I just love like meeting new people.
Yeah. Well, you're really good.
You know, I just, yeah, I mean, I could talk to a wall, but that is always fun to me. It's like, I think when you put so much emphasis on the outcome that you miss the journey.
Yeah.
That like, that's when dating becomes like laborious. I know you're going to make fun of me for saying that word, but yeah, I mean, it just like, it's not fun. It takes the fun out of it. Like if you can go into this being like, hey, I'm going to be open-minded and just see if like there's any sort of spark with this person, even if it's like, you know what, like there wasn't a physical attraction, but I think you're really funny and we should hang out. Great. You might have a new friend.
Yeah.
I think like we put so much focus on the outcome that we forget about the journey. And, you know, I think there are things in our lives that like, we do need to envision the outcome so that we're not like worried about the journey. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, oh my God, I'm never gonna own a house because I have to do all of these things. No, envision yourself owning a house and then let the journey unfold. But well, I think when it comes to dating and love, like you can't like, if your goal on every date is I need to marry this person, you've shot yourself in the foot. Mm-hmm. I think it's like the goal should just be from each date, like I'm going to go in here with an open mind and see if there's any sort of connection. And if there's not, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately you're going to work through enough people where you're going to find that spark.
Right.
And if your expectations are such that like, you got to marry the first person you're going to go on a date with, like, and it doesn't work, then you're feeding into your own fears. Yeah. You're like, you are fueling that fire.
Yeah. Let's go to Terry. She said, my biggest fear is trying to figure out who is authentic. It stresses me out. I have this fear personally about dating apps. Because I'm such a intuitive energy person that I'm so nervous about apps for the reason of like, oh God, it's texting or it's messaging. Like, how do you know if someone's authentic or not? Like, what's that? What is that about, Chip? Do you struggle with that on apps?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll play devil's advocate a little bit. Like, I think you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, in any situation, people want to put the best version of themselves forward. I think it happens on, you know, social media apps too, you know, like
totally.
But I also think that like, if you can like take the skeptic out of yourself for a second, there's a lot that people that can, there's the dating apps. There's a beautiful way that people can reveal a little bit about themselves too. That is so much more clear than when a hot guy walks up to you at a bar.
Yeah.
Because all you get there is like that, the package. Cool. And unless they say something really charming. And so, I mean, for me, I always try to look for some humor because I feel like it levels the playing field. Mm-hmm. And it can be a little like disarming and it sort of takes like the pressure out of the room. Like if someone has like a nice joke or like something that makes them seem like they're not taking it too seriously,
yeah,
that I'm like, okay, I can get on board with that. We all have the skeptic in us, and I do think that like, you know, a lot of people are liars and they're just trying to get laid, so they're going to put out there what they want you to believe.
Yeah, it's so fucking scary. Again, I think this would be a thing that I, well, this is what I would tell myself is the stronger I